This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
It is just past 18 hours, 31 minutes and 20 seconds, East African time, time for John Sibi Okumu on Wednesday. This being Wednesday, the 14th of June, 2023, Hamjambo na karibuni, hello and welcome. The hashtag for this edition will be Kenya at 60, advertising. So, to define our terms, it serves to share an understanding of what advertising is. Well, here goes. Advertising is a form of communication that aims to promote a product, service, idea, or brand by informing, influencing, and persuading a target audience. The primary goal of advertising is to attract attention, generate interest, and ultimately drive consumer behavior, for example, through increasing product sales, brand awareness, or customer engagement. I can take it utterly for granted that, from professional experience, my guest, a mystery until just before the end, as usual, is well aware of that definition. And much more besides. Let's first hear responses to the question, does advertising influence what you choose to buy? Je, matangazo ya kibiashara inaathiri unachochagua kununua?
Yes, advertising does influence what I buy. I'm a person who tends to appreciate effort. So you don't just sit there and wait that I'll come, but I appreciate that person who puts in effort to sell whatever they're selling.
Yes, because I'll know that the product exists and maybe I'll do some more research about it.
Yeah, sometimes vitu zenye huwa zina advertise huwa ziko poa, because you can order something, then you get haiko poa pia.
And I'm going to stop using whatever it is that I'm using and I'll go for that certain product to try it.
Advertising is the brand of the product that I end up buying. But first of all, I must have thought about buying something. So what advertising will come in, it will just help me choose the right brand, because then I know of the unique selling points of that particular brand.
We tend to have an unusual tendency of making sure that we purchase what we see and be part of the brand and fit in into the society.
If no one told me, I wouldn't have bought. But now that it's on my face, I will buy, because it's constantly put to me.
If I've seen repeated adverts of this thing or wherever they're posting that I'm available, but when I need the thing, for example, when I need medicine and I can't leave the house, the first thing I'll think of is the advert that I saw. So I'll try that service just to see if at all it's a good service.
Advertising creates desire and motivates us to purchase products and services. It creates a sense of need, highlights the benefits, and convinces us that we'll be better off.
Nashawishiwa kupendelea sifa zilizopendekezwa.
Dada, comments on the comments, please.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of what is being said is not surprising to me, simply because the world we live in today, we're in a very high consumerism type of an environment. So what you find is that what people see and whatever they're told, there's two things that happen. Either it drives a desire to have it, or it, you know, it brings out a desire to be whatever is being shown in that advertising. And that's a part of the way advertising is moving now, more around influence, not just the selling aspect.
So, would you agree with every comment that was made? You wouldn't challenge any of them?
I think what I would challenge is when people, like the conversation, the lady who said, when it's advertised, ni poa. Not everything that's advertised is poa. And I guess that's where some of the standards have to come into play. Because the assumption that it is poa, so it means I've seen it, it's going to be there, and I'm, you know, without that proof of purchase, And that's where I think there's a bit of the confusion between the advertising gives me the awareness and tells me some things that it might be. But I think the leap that we need to transition to is a faith that just because it's advertised and it looks like ni poa, even when I get it, it will be poa.
You know, something rather weird, preparing for this episode, I was wondering, my knowledge of Kiswahili, whether there was in fact a word for advertising. But the Gwijis, the mataalamu in this office said matangazo ya kibiashara, announcements for business. And I asked myself, Dada, whether one thing's for sure, there's an age difference between us. I'm older than you. Remember when you first became aware that there was such a thing as advertising as a young girl? What did you see and how did it influence you?
I think the first bit of advertising, I mean, when I look at the history of advertising, I remember the very simple ads that came up. And I think when I look back now, they're probably not necessarily kosher things to speak about. Because remember, as a teenager, one of the most powerful ads was for a brand called Clear Tone.
Right.
And I don't know if you recall, there used to be an ad that had this incredibly beautiful face with just a single mole on one cheek. And she was completely close up to you. And she said, look at this face. Come a little closer. Yes. Now look at that skin. Yes. Not bad, huh?
Yes.
I mean, I still remember the words of that 40 years later. So there is an incredible power in a way.
I'll tell you what. Yeah. I think we might have a legal suit here because I think you were thinking about the campaign for Ambi Extra.
Was it Ambi? Was it Clear Tone?
Ambi Extra. Come, take a look at this skin. Doesn't it look
come
cool?
Come a little closer. No, it was the way it was done.
Right.
And when I was listening to some of those Vox boxes, I was sitting there thinking, that is where the real power of advertising really is. And when I reflect on some of the old ads, because they spoke to you, me.
Right.
And they were very simple. They said, what is? And what you're finding now, the world in many ways, on my own reflection, is starting to evolve back to that space. Because when you look at advertising now, it's around influence, right? And those old ads actually were influencing you. The second big ad I remember is Close Up. Anybody remember those original of that generation, many years ago, those close-up ads? There were films.
For toothpaste, now.
There were films.
Right.
So an ad for you was an entertainment, which is what now influencers do for us. We watch them going here to this hotel and they turn and they say it's beautiful. Look at the covers and look at the food. So it's a story in a different way. So in the past, we had to watch it because it was prime prepped, production values all in place. And the close-up ad of that guy who wanted the girl, and he'd go close to her and she'd be like, oh, and walk away and run. And then he'd be a close-up comes to the rescue and he brushes and he gets the girl. But it was a whole, you know, it was a sequel. It was a story. Yeah. So that, I think, is probably what we're coming back to now when I think of old advertising, when I listen to some of those comments around, it's no longer do this, does this, da-da-da, buy, finish with slogan now. No. The conversations and the Vox boxes I was hearing is that people are talking about, you know, it tells me what we are and na-na-na. So you could hear a bit of a story, a selling story, not just a telling story.
You know, again, with things like advertising, on so many topics that we discuss here, there's the idea that there was something which was quintessentially African from the word go, and that we always had our own ways of doing things. This is sort of leitmotif, a recurring theme. We had our own way of doing things. Is the notion of advertising, trumpeting one's goods, alien to our culture?
Yes and no. And okay, why do I say that? It is not alien because I would imagine, and when I look at the history that we did, and you're a mwalimu, you could probably reflect on some of those things. Advertising was different. I mean, there was a selling advertising. If a family had a beautiful girl or they had a wonderful son, they had ways of letting the other family know, right?
Right.
That this union was possible.
Yes.
Which is, in a way, a form of advertising, isn't it?
I take it, yes, take it entirely, yes.
Yes. So.
But you're talking now of a more social construct where you're saying,
yes,
what we can share amongst ourselves as a community,
yes,
as opposed to a bigger society, the idea of a nation, a country, where you're thinking, what can we sell to the whole world?
But then you didn't have the opportunity to do that.
Right.
Yeah. So you know, there wasn't the media and the mediums to make it, to amplify it. But having said that, whatever you say, the fact that artifacts, salt, spices move from one country to another, that was a form of the advertising. It was real sell at that particular time. So I take it to you. And in taking it to you and selling the values of it, it was direct selling, direct marketing, rather, as opposed to advertising. So yes, in that form, it did exist. So what happened with the, you know, with the communication forms and the medias coming in, radio, television? Then that's when the Western aspects came of packaging it and right, making it a lot more, you know, structured and real telling and, you know, really contrived.
But I could imagine that before independence, I could imagine that if there were radio stations, which there were, nothing was actually geared to the native. The advertising wasn't for us.
No. Unless it was telling you, don't leave your house at six.
Yes.
You know, that's a different form of communication.
Yes.
But no, probably not. And a lot of the ads at time, as you can imagine, again, didn't have locals. Yeah.
Who featured in them in any shape?
Yes. Or, yes. No.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a long and enjoyable conversation, but we have to take a break. Thank you. Our first break. The best mix of music, 98.4 Capital FM. Dada, let's stick with history for a while. This retrospective, this notion of looking back all those 60 years of our independence. Again, from personal experience, do you see any milestones across the decades before I quiz you in slightly more detail?
What are the big milestones? I think... first of all, if you look at the way the mediums have worked, we started with radio being very predominant. And, you know, radio was the stories and everything else and a lot of TV. I remember, in fact, when you look at in Kenya, I mean, there was always a divide. There was the urban versus the rural. If you look at the urban, yes, they had the access to the television and the ads that came through that. They had access to newspapers and magazines. Do you remember all the big magazines of those time, Drum and True Love and all those, which were big mediums for advertising? And that's where you put your communication pieces there.
Now that you now that you mention urban versus rural, would you say that there was a discernible dumbing down, talking down to the one Ainchi?
Yes.
Deliberately.
I don't even think people recognize that they were talking down. So I'll give you a bit of context why I say that. If you looked at all the companies that could afford to do advertising in that generation in the past, they probably all had expatriate marketing directors and marketing teams. And so the nuance of local versus foreigner was never there. So there wasn't that even sensitivity that this language is a little bit patronizing, maybe a little bit condescending, because they were, you know, they would write copy in light of their eyes of the way they see things, right? But when I was talking about urban rural, the other big thing you find that in the urban areas, yes, the ads you'd see are, you know, had to be shorter. There was a lot more awareness and everything else. But rural, the only ad you'd get to access was what you'd see through, I don't know if you recall, the van that used to come. Pearl and Dean actually was a company that used to do it.
Yes,
and
indeed.
They'd go out in the rural areas and you'd watch these movies on a truck that would come. And the whole village knew the truck. And there was a program that everybody knew at this particular time. The truck is coming for us to all watch the movies. And a big part was not just the movie, not just the Bruce Lee movie that was going to be showing, but also it was the ads. And the advertising had to be epic. Yeah, there had to be these big stories which were told and, you know, they're almost part of the movie themselves. And it's the same thing, if you recall, even at that time when you went to Kenya Cinema or Nairobi Cinema, you had to bear, what, 10, 15 minutes of advertising in each particular break, and each of them were done like a film.
Yes,
so indeed. So it was a very different mode of communication and selling. And that's why I sit down and say, when I reflect, I think it's almost like we've done a full circle. Because then we went to shorter bits, clips, 30 second, 1 second, you know, print this, outdoor and everything else. And then people got jaded. And then social media came in, digital came in. And now influencers are the big thing. And we've gone back to somebody telling the story of why this product without necessarily showing it to you.
Yeah, but a different one. Yes, yeah. Indeed. We'll come back to that maybe towards the end about the idea of just how the world, technology has changed things.
Yeah.
But I'm going back to the idea. I mean, I have voiced a couple of ads myself in my day and I still continue to do so.
Yes.
Dada, this whole nation, where did it come from that you had to have a 15 seconds, 30 seconds, 45 seconds, and you were really pushing it if you went to 60? Who was guiding that whole process?
It's both. I mean, I would like to say it's both the people who are going to flight it because they're commercial, they're a business, they needed to make money out of it.
Yes.
And so they had to segment it so they can price it. But there was also a degree of sitting down and saying, how much can a consumer consume in so long? Right. So right. I think there was a symbiotism to it. I am a person. I run a station. I run a medium where these things are flighted. And so I need to make money. So I tell you, these is for this segment. This is it. This is it. Because I have other things anyway that I'm flighting. But then at the same time, there was the element where you sit down and ask as a consumer, how much can I see? How much am I going to take out? And it's not going to be one in a segment of ads. I mean, if I listen to 3 minutes, I'm bored. I mean, you know, even at that time, people would be bored after 3 minutes of some ad, right? So it's a combination of both, I think.
Okay, there's capitalism coming in. Again, talking about myself, I remember presenting a program called The Summit, which was sort of face-to-face interviews, one-on-one with the great and good.
Yes.
And the idea that people were jostling, as the more it became popular, the more people wanted to have the ad just before the program or in the middle.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the whole idea of pricing.
Yes.
We've just said we've got to tell people, I need to know what kind of aspirin to buy.
Yes.
But there's a sort of, there's a pack of hyenas there with more money than the rest who are paying more money to get their ad prime positioning.
Yes.
Again, is that something that you'd comment on? I mean, You could sort of Mother Teresa a bit and say, you know, why
that's
not?
That's reality.
That's reality.
Yeah,
we have to accept that.
Yeah, because if you're running a business, I mean, it's not a charity. You know, you've got a business. You have to find the commercial ways to make it work for you, and that's how some of those things started to evolve. What segments you do, and in a way, I would sit down and say it also benefited. I guess also. The people who it was being advertised to. Because at the end of the day, how much can you see in a particular time? Because if you let it be free for all, imagine just because somebody can pay and I only have 3 minutes of advertising, I'm just going to listen to 3 minutes of you. What about everybody else who I could listen to? So,
but I was suggesting that some people were prepared to pay more than others. and get ahead of the queue.
Oh, but that you have to, again, yes. Because we've got that same 3 minutes and we recognize science of it is very clear.
The science
of the beginning and towards the end is where, so you in the middle, you might be caught up as you know.
Yeah. But the Mzungu, they've got the Super Bowl on and apparently these guys are playing football and one ad, with somebody sort of tripping, showing bits of flesh in the middle and saying, it costs, billions of dollars.
Yes.
But it's ludicrous because the product which is being advertised, you could argue that all of this for a bottle of beer, around a bottle of beer.
But here is the thing. I mean, the commercial's not around that as well. There's also the commercials around how many people are going to see it. Super Bowl is a different ball game.
Right. It's an alien concept, but yes.
Yeah, it is a different ball game because by the time you're getting an ad on that, boy, it had better be brilliant and absolutely impactful because you have just that amount of time for people
to
go and
remember
it.
I'll come back to you.
But for us,
the modernity of it. When Boys to Men came the other day and they were to perform for us. First of all, very expensive tickets. Things went well.
They sold out.
They sold out. Yeah. So they had no need for. And the point that I'm making here is that the product in itself can be of such worth that it needs no advertising. Yo-Yo Ma doesn't need advertising.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
The blanket thing, the elephant in the room, is that you are actually goading people into a way of conduct to keep up with the Kamaus and the Otienos and the Mohammeds.
So, here is the thing.
They wouldn't deal with it.
So here is the thing. I think it's because if you think advertising is that thing I put for you, in some TV ad, whatever, and I tell you, do this, buy this because it's great for you. This shirt, best fit, best fabric, doesn't allow sweat and all that. That is the old advertising style. So when you say nothing needs advertising, actually everything needs advertising in a way, if we use a broader term, advertising, because how in the world is anybody going to know that JSO, aka Mwalimu, has this particular show at this particular time? It doesn't matter how great, we all know you're great, you have a great, how are they going to know? There has to be a different way of letting people know that this show exists and for people to listen. It doesn't matter how popular you are. Advertising will always exist. Now, what you need to unpack is what do you mean by advertising? If you think the advertising of somebody has written a copy and a script somewhere and plonked to put a picture with a face and a slogan, that's not what we mean. The act of creating awareness for anything is actually advertising. The act of talking to people and saying, I'm going to be on this show, even on a social media post, that is advertising. The act of having a hashtag, which you tell people, listen, when you talk about anything and great things as you listen, please put hashtag advertising Kenya at Kenya, 60. Kenya at 60 advertising. Just stick it there. That is advertising. So the whole concept we understood of advertising in the past has moved. Or rather, I'd rather put it differently and say, remove advertising paradigms that existed. Work on the assumption or let's use a concept that I need people to be made aware of something. How do I do it? And the how is what we call advertising now.
Okay, I'll take that on board as a progression, but let's still go backward in time because we're talking about this idea of, is it therefore culture specific or is it being imposed by a predominant culture elsewhere? So, in other words, over the years, is our advertising or is our advertising their advertising? I don't know whether I've put that in good English.
I'll be honest with you. There's never going to be our anymore or their advertising simply because the world has become one. The day, this thing called, internet, digital came into play, we stopped having boundaries. So there's nothing there and there's nothing ours. Everything has become one big melting pot. The only thing that you do is you adapt it to make it relevant to who we are. So if you look at Kenyans on Twitter.
Yes.
most popular, K-O-T,
yes,
can make you or break you. That concept wasn't ours, right?
Yes.
I mean, Twitter is not something we brought. It's something that came here. But look at the power it has in the messaging and what it does in our market. We've adapted it as Kenyans on Twitter to make it work for us, for good or for bad.
Would you suggest the manner in which we've adapted it?
We adapted in that we have figured the power of it. We've adapted it because we recognize through it we can drive a lot of influence. And I keep saying for good or for bad, right? If I want to advertise anything today, if I want to say JSO is a great person and I have a great following and I put it on my Twitter handle,
right,
you'll become a great person.
Oh, my goodness.
And it works the other way around as well.
I should have asked you earlier. Okay.
It works the other way as well.
Right.
So that is the principle that I'm saying, you adapt it. You take things now because the world is no longer, there are no lines.
Will we, out of nationalism, out of a sense of African, will we have a role to play? Or is this another instance of, you know, like on the World Wide Web, content from Africa?
Oh, no, we will.
Is 3%. Oh, yes. 3%. Oh, yes.
Indeed, now, if you look at what's happening, it has equalized everything. The platforms have equalized because now there's no barrier per se of production value, this, that, and whatever. Everybody, I can create and I can do. This afternoon, I was at a Black YouTube event where they were speaking to creators, Black creators from this market. And everybody now is becoming equalized. You're being given the same tools and skills. So suddenly you could become exactly like anybody else in the world by creating content then. And because you're African, Black, or whatever it is, it means you're going to create stuff that is relevant to you and your community. So I think we are starting to equalize from that perspective.
Thank you very much. It's 18 hours, 59 minutes and 15 seconds. With KCB Bank, the official financial partner of the 2023 WRC Safari Rally from the 22nd to the 25th of June in Naivasha. Dial *844# today and get the Lipa na KCB till 522-533 to receive payments for free. Feel the roar with KCB Bank. For people, for better, regulated by the Central Bank of Kenya. Time for a break. The best mix of music. Capital FM. Dada, now we have to move on. What could we call this? Beefs, philosophizing, mythologizing. Let me seek your view on some things. Over the years, this idea that whenever there was a campaign, an advertising campaign, you could have a formula, and it was basically a campaign which had run in Australia, Paris, New York, 5 years before that. The creative directors engaged here at huge price and remuneration simply ran what they knew for a gullible market and made their millions because nobody knew better. Would you comment? It's not the first time you've heard that.
And this is why I said...
Imitation.
And that is what happened, you know, because we sat here, you know, and these guys came and there was this sense that this is a creative world. They have a lot more exposure and experience and, you know, that's what they're bringing out here. By the way, there's still elements of that to some extent here. But what you find and what is breaking that is the fact that there's a lot more demand for us. There's a lot more awareness. There's a lot more sense of give me something that is ours. You know, the wokeness of consumers is a lot more real now. And people want to see stuff that is relating to me and where I'm at and where I'm situated. So yes, those things would happen. You get an ad and you see clips and you couldn't even know as much because there wasn't, you know, the opportunity for you to see these things. The internet wasn't there then. Now somebody shows you something, you Google and you can say, hey, that looks like something I've seen somewhere else. Why are you regurgitating something that's an ad from somewhere else? You can't do that then. And that was an opportunity that presented itself at that time. But when I look at the positiveness of it, is that it allowed a lot of training of the locals here. Because if you came and you did something here, whether you borrowed, stole, or built on whatever it is you did, you still need a local talent to support it. And that local talent looked, saw, and learnt. And were able then to evolve to become the next generation. So I think for me, that's a proposition for me. And if anybody, one of my legacy things is to try and really develop even more local creative.
The whole notion of integrity, other professions, I guess if you go to a doctor, one is the assumption is that what they're prescribing for you by writing things down and putting their signature to it is the best possible thing that you could get. Do advertisers, given their skill to propagate messages, do they ever depart from an ethical, moralistic standpoint? Or if I come to you and say, this is the local brew that we're producing in my village.
Mm-hmm.
It gets people completely inebriated in about 2 seconds flat.
Mm.
Sell it and say, if you want to have a high, you know, Ugagugu is for you. And I say, how much are you going to pay me? And you say, well, when we run a campaign such as this, if you pay us, and you're off. So in other words, you don't care.
No, you
don't
can't.
Care what you advertise.
Unfortunately, you can't because there are standards that exist.
Oh.
Yeah. So many years ago, we did create an advertising standard, even though it is informal. There's still sectors which are very clear in terms of the standards and categories or sectors who have that standard.
We have the Kenya Bureau of Standards.
And
they're meant to regulate the kind of...
I'm not going to comment on that because we're
meant to be having forthright conversations.
So let me put it this way.
Right.
If you, for example, put something out there which is not true, you're going to be called out. Unfortunately or fortunately today, you don't have the same gullibility. Yeah. Because everybody is aware and they see what happens. In fact, I would put you to the test. Go and put an ad now, a little one that says, you know, you have something that is going to grow your hair in 1 week. Try it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that's the same premise you're using. You know, because, you know, you figure you can and you're going to sell a few bits. After 3, 4, 5 people have bought that thing, tried it, let me tell you, they're going to run you out of this town. Because they're going to do the same counter ad saying, how could you dare put out that ad and you know it is not true and everything else. And before you know it, you know, the consumer court has become a lot more vocal and has a lot more power. So I don't think the ability to do some of those things, you're going to get away with it now.
So Dada, you would say unequivocally that the copy and the messages that we do receive through advertising is intrinsically correct.
Generally, I can't vouch for every single small consumer, whatever. So one of the Vox boxes, one of the girls sat down and said, oh, because I saw it. And part of the reason when I think I keep leaning on that poet, you know, nikiona najua iko poa. Ikiwa advertise iko poa, kwa hivyo ndio nikinunua itakuwa poa. That is a fallacy. The only poorness of it is that you have seen it looks and you know it's going to be there. A lot of times, how many times do people from an ad or from something that shows some of the best social posts and things that I like to look is what was advertised versus what I got.
Yes, okay.
And so you're very easily and very quickly called out now. I think your runway to get away with some of those or things that aren't true is a little bit short. And sure, you can have all people giving 30 days back, you know, please, you know, we have all these people, we're really sorry, it must be only you. But your runway after a while can build up a lot more. And you know, I think that's where the check and balance exists now in the market.
May I turn to gender? Mm. The idea of, again, not the sort of intricacies of, you know, sexuality and orientation, but just gender in the terms of male versus female.
Mm-hmm.
Those who identify as being male, masculine, and those who identify as being female or feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to you that over the years, over the past 60 years, Dada,
mm-hmm.
our aspirational desire
mm-hmm.
is to be like Mzungus. So that when I look at any ads in the nation, the women, let's start off with women, the women that I see there, they wear a great predilection for wigs, a great predilection for basically not looking like the people I'm encountering in the street. I say that, I mean, we're not going to sort of have a quiz. I'm trying to say aspirationally, mm-hmm. we're trying to look like somebody else. And you'd say that isn't the case?
I'd put it to you, it also works the adverse. If you look at one of the most popular things that happens now in terms of face and advertising is people, you know, doing their lips. Right? What do you call?
Bring an earring.
No. Not Botox. Fillers for your lips so that you have fuller lips.
Right.
Fuller lips are African. Correct?
Okay.
But it's the biggest thing that people are doing. They want to have these fuller lips.
I'm looking more to the faces.
Yes.
The personages
yes.
in the ads. Those are not Kenyan models. They're not Kenyan.
They are Kenyan. Who says, who determines what is, we evolve?
Well, I think I'd have to do some research and find out from the record store whether these pictures are of Kenyan gentlemen.
Oh, they are
I think that maybe they're Jamaican.
No.
Maybe they're white British. They're not Kenyan.
Everybody advertising. We have enough talent in this market for everybody to be Kenyan. So I think what confuses you is that, okay, people want to have the lovely long locks or, you know, and things like that. And they want the
hair
and everything.
So we're all going into this sort of Lupita Nyong'o braids versus non-braids.
So here is the thing.
Braids now.
So here's the thing. For a long time, I was in a business that was doing both hair and all the beauty stuff and everything else. And a lot of Africans actually moved back to natural hair. Now, when you see people doing that, there's two incentives. Yes, there's a beauty incentives. I want to have this because for whatever aspects it makes me, as African women, we change our hair. We are fortunate that we can change our hair.
We're wearing wigs every day.
Yes, but we can change it. When we remove the wig, we've got cornrows, right? So we have the cornrows below that wig. It's the versatility that we have. Now, you try and manage. You're lucky you don't have hair.
Yes.
You're very
extremely.
Lucky. And you're very lucky also.
Cost effective.
You never had daughters.
Yes.
So if you did, you'd understand that managing African hair is an absolute nightmare. So if you find solutions, relaxers, all these things that allow you to manage your hair, it is fine. But in the same way, we also like our natural. How many people now have gone for the natural look? My hair is all natural. These are sister locks. You lock them, they stay that way, which was a style that Africans did for years, you know, for 100 years. So I think, yes, one could say we're trying to look like white people, but I would say we are trying to increase our versatility. That's a positive outlook I'd like to use.
Right. I don't think, you know, I don't think the aim of our encounter is for us to argue for the next 20 minutes. I'm just raising what comes to mind. With regard to men, being one myself, I also feel this huge urge to be the macho man, the macho man is the one who's being put to, across to me through advertising.
Uh-huh.
He almost invariably has a beard or something. He obviously has got a six-pack. In the ads, maybe we're reading the Sunday
Which
Nation.
Ad? Which I, ad? Give me one. And I'll tell you why. And I'll tell you why I'm saying.
The reason I won't is that part of the plan is not
never mentioned any.
Is not to name names and give some free advertising for the people we don't want to be seen.
Okay, can
I'm talking. No, let's be slightly more philosophical. The idea of an image.
Yeah.
Would my grandpa, let's go back that far,
yeah.
identify with the image of the African male, which is being portrayed through daily advertising?
So
Would he, if you've got one.
Let me give you two arguments.
Yes.
First, I've told you, when women wear wigs, do all their protective things. Because our hair is difficult, it's complex to manage. You're using whatever means. Those wigs, some are straight, some are afro, some are braids. You know, they're not always straight, right? So I've parked that argument. There's a degree of versatility. There's a degree of protectiveness that we're doing. Now, when you talk about these men, you say or you claim are macho. All those things, if anything, people argue the exact opposite. They say these are metrosexual men. Those are not real African. But what is all this, the gloss and the care and the mafuta that has been put on all those beards, the nails manicured and everything? There's nothing macho about that. I think what's happened in the world is that people have accepted that it is okay to want to look after yourself. Whether you're male, whether you're female, it's okay. Having a great body, working out, doing whatever, it's okay for you to do that. And that presentation then is up to anybody to figure, you know, whether it's something they aspire to, something they like, or whether they don't like. And I think for me, that's the way, that is my view on it. Sure, there'll always be, for many years, we had women sitting on a car to sell it. Nobody sat down and said, that's really, really sexist.
Yes.
I mean, why should you have a woman sitting on a car? To sell it. What right. is the point? What right. functional benefit are you selling right. in that particular car? So it's the same argument now. I sit down and say, you know, the visuals that are presented are the ones that people might feel are appealing and might look good and are easy on the eye in order to make sure it becomes aspirational.
Time for a break. Asante, Dad. Dada, let's go again to, again, me just thinking aloud. You said you have daughters.
Mm-hmm.
The idea now of our country being very young, the demographic Kenyans are always all under 35.
Mm.
Again, let me take you to the image way back when somebody comes along and they say all these natives, they're up in the trees, they're stark naked.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to educate them and clothe them and give them a religion, and it's all too primitive. We move forward to 2023 and our daughters now want to display the same amount of flesh, if not more, as their grandmothers did or may have done as an attribute of sexiness. So you've got your leggings, hip-hugging thing. So there is a great urge to the sexuality. The men, on the other hand, you're saying they must take time to look after themselves. They are also, quote-unquote, behaving in a manner, I keep on evoking the poor dear, that would have offended my grandma if she were to come to church. I think advertising and images on film and Hollywood are highly responsible for these constructs. What would you say?
You know, we can have a real argument on this one.
Well, it's not an argument. I'm asking about your view.
That's what I'm telling
you. It's different. I'm asking about your view. We haven't started arguing yet.
Okay, we could.
Yes.
We could get there, but I know you're a gentleman, so you won't, and we don't have the time.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Here we were as a people.
Yes.
Very happy the way we were. I remember as a child walking in Mombasa, the women would tie the shuka, the Griyama women, remember? Enhance their butt a little bit, cushioned, have a kanga round, and their breasts were out. And nobody thought two things about it. It was okay. It's the way we were. It was our culture. Then somewhere along the way, we're told we need to cover up, cover up, cover up. Right? So what did we do? We covered up. Because a new person decided covering up is the way it's supposed to be. Who was that person who decided covering up is the way it's supposed to be? Was it us? Was it some foreigner? Who is it who determined that it is not right for you, whether it's your tradition or not, to wander around uncovered? So our thought process was changed by somebody who we thought was more superior or whatever it is we bought that. Come enter today. We want to go back, yeah, to being covered, uncovered, whatever.
Because that
it is.
Self-same person is uncovered.
So the same,
and that self-same person is no longer going to church.
So here we are. Exactly. Yes. So exactly. We sit here. We believe somebody who said, because to go to church, you have to cover up. So we covered up. That same person stopped going to church, uncovered.
Uncovered.
And now when we uncover, we're cursing ourselves for uncovering. And I sit down and say, now who's to blame here? Right. Who'd we blame? Who'd we blame
for that particular thing? So you would thing? Say that we're going in the right direction to sort of end up in a restaurant with our rear, you know, some kind of embroidery that makes our...
Listen, I'm not going to judge anybody and say, you know, what you choose and what you don't choose. You know, people are comfortable.
But
I think we're getting to a place.
We're being prescriptive as a society in so many other areas. We're telling people, because we are Africans, because we're Kenyan, you hear this
but
whole
But it's not
sort of,
African. Yes, but right, this is global. This right. is the way everybody looks, whether you're Kenyan, whether you're... you know, you're Asian, whether you're American, you're whatever, the world is
but
converging.
If there is a prescription.
It's converging.
If there is a prescription like right next door in Uganda, attitudes to, you know, homosexuality and the like, it's in the name of Africanity. So where do we stand in this big debate? We're the enlightened ones, we're going global, pardon me for...
I think... And this is where the controversial conversation and the viewpoints come in. I think we're now at a place. We're at a place and we're at a crossroad. Who is it? Was it with you where we said we think the world is ending?
Yes, when we're having tea before
when
we met
had
here.
Tea
and
said
I gave
the world
you my,
ending.
My personal philosophy. the world is coming to an end.
The world is coming to an end in some form. And I think what's happened is we've done full circle. And now we're in that turmoil. It's like a machine when you've thrown all the clothes in and, you know, you haven't turned it on. And now we've turned it on and it's swirling and it hasn't stopped. And as it swirls, we don't know what's going to come out clean, what's going to come out straight, what isn't going to come out. Because unfortunately, there's the aspect of our traditions. There's the aspect of that we're caught in this new world and what it is. And we're not necessarily clear who and what we want to prescribe to, because whatever you do, you're going to be called a hypocrite. Whatever you do, you're going to be a hypocrite. Because if you sit down and say, cover up, you know, your bust, you shouldn't show your bust. Somebody's going to say, but your grandmother, great grandmothers, they had no big deal. It was not an issue you did. How, just until the other day, if you were breastfeeding as a woman, you were told to cover up. Why? You know, now we've gone the other way and said, no, actually, we do recognize that is a feeding mechanism. There's nothing to be ashamed about. In fact, encouraging us to do that. So the hypocrisy that comes out with whatever you say is what's going to come up now. Because if you lean on tradition, somebody's going to say, but weren't you telling us do this, do that? If you lean on modern, you're told, but how could you? You're forgetting your tradition. So I don't know how we're going to come out to the end of this tube, to be honest.
Right, time enough for us to look to the future. Mm. And again, this idea of competition to traditional advertising, even as it evolves.
Mm.
And again, I am of my generation. I do go onto YouTube and Facebook and I twiddle about. And there's a gentleman who is teaching everybody how to cook.
Yeah.
And he says, chop, 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 onions, put them in the fridge.
Yep. Vinegar, I love those. I love those.
And then there's somebody else who's doing this and doing this. Is traditional advertising on the way to death, the tomb, burial, quisha maneno?
Oh, yes.
It is?
Yeah.
So you'll be out of a job soon.
No. We transition and transform.
Okay. So
the biggest space for us now is technology.
Right. And how?
And technology supporting advertising.
And where's the professionalism in all this? Sorry, we don't have that much time, so I'm sort of like badgering you. No. Where's the professionalism?
What
in
is
all
professional?
This?
What do you mean professional?
In you knowing more than you know my kids.
That is it.
My kids do. Why should I come to you as opposed to...
You're going to come to me because I'm going to optimize. I know how to optimize data so that whatever it is you're communicating hits the right spot. That is what you're coming for me to me to do for you. I'm also going to help you figure out who is the person who, when they are speaking to your product, right? When they're speaking, there's more credibility. When it comes to media buying, I am going to optimize how you buy efficiently across all those digital platforms to make sure that ad of yours gets seen and has the highest engagement. That is the future. So some of the platforms and the technology that we are deploying now as we try and transition to a technology creative company is that they do exactly that. If I am trying to sell, I am an institution and I need to sell insurance, banking product to you. You can't spend your time fiddling and having people making phone calls. I could put something in the system that understands where do your consumers look for, what are the products, what are they lacking, and therefore give you a lead that allows you then to develop that product. That is the future of advertising, right?
Thank you. I'm going to think about it deeply before I go to sleep.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably time now, Dada, for you to reveal, Jeweni Nani, who are you?
Oh, is that the time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I am Patricia. I'm Patricia Ithau.
Patricia Ithau. And how would you describe yourself professionally? We've said that you're one of the cognoscenti.
I would describe myself as someone who at the moment is running one of the leading creativity, communication, media and influence agencies in sub-Saharan Africa. That's what I'm doing right now. That's my current day job. Yeah.
Right. Well, what at this point, as we draw to a close, we think again about young listeners, quintessentially young demographic of listeners, and to get our guest, our mystery guest, now revealed as Patricia Ithau, Group CEO of a major advertising and PR concern. What was the road? What was your sort of Eliud Kipchoge? If people want to be you, what did you do? When did you decide this is what you wanted to do?
Very young, probably. Mm. I think I always tell people when I was very young, I used to look at a newspaper and I'd see all these. In those days when companies were announcing their results, they'll stick their results and they'll put all the photos of all the directors. It's still very vivid to me. And it was black and white, of course, because newspapers were black and white. And it was always all these men, many. And they all looked old. But you know, when you're 10,
yes,
anybody over 20 is ancient.
Exactly.
So, but they were all old. I think they were genuinely old. And I sit down and I used to ask myself, why is it? How come there are no women? Why is it there are no women? And the other thing is, not many of them, there was always a mix, white and black. And I just didn't get it. And so I think that's where the seed was born. That's one place I wanted to be, grow in the corporate, from a corporate space, and try and chart a path in the corporate world. And that's what I did. And I've had great experiences in great companies. I've been fortunate enough to work in some amazing organizations which have given me, where I've cut my teeth and have given me a lot of experience, a lot of exposure. And I think I'll always be grateful for that.
I'd like to ask, again, imagine schools, this is Careers Day, and we'll have a free Careers Day advertising here. What kind of educational milestones? So there you are at school, you do your O levels, you do your A levels, mm-hmm. It's time to go to university. Mm-hmm. What did you study to set you up to do what you did?
Surprisingly, I wanted to do law. And I even worked at a law firm before I went to university. But after my stint in law firm, I realized, maybe not pacey enough. And then, so I went on to do a Bachelor of Commerce degree.
Okay, yeah, so a BCom.
Yes, that's what I did. And then I did a master's thereafter in strategic management. And I've done a number of executive education programs.
Would you sort of counsel this idea of getting a job, working at it, and then adding to your academic store? Or do you just go straight ahead and be a PhD by the time you're 30?
No, I think you need the experience. I've got two daughters now who went to very good universities.
Yes.
And the older one, who's more cut out to the business side, part of it, she's done her degree and she's very clear. She really needs to cut her teeth, build her base and everything else before she actually goes to do her master's. And she'll learn more. Add a lot more value, and you know, she could also, you know, take out a lot more from that perspective. I'm of the view that, you know, you do need to go and do stuff, try whatever it is and then park and then you know, chart your way into the direction that you want to. And secondly, the path is not straight anymore,
right?
Yeah.
Are you the for specialization, or are you a Renaissance person? You can ride horses, run
advertising. And I think probably because I suffer from undiagnosed ADHD or something, but I am very clearly, I am somebody who believes you should be versatile.
You should be able to do anything.
You should be agile. You should not be, you know, this bound, you know, just relax, be.
Yes.
And that's actually the biggest thing that I coach people when I do, is just learn to be.
It is 19 hours, 29 minutes and 20 seconds just passed. And it's time to stop. So do continue to give us feedback, hopefully positive and reassuring, on the Twitter handle at Capital FM Kenya, or drop us a text or WhatsApp message on 0701-984-984. I've been talking to Patricia Ithau, CEO of a leading advertising, communication and PR agency in sub-Sahara Africa. And I hope, as usual, you've been listening to John Sibiokumu on Wednesday. Thank you most kindly for doing that. Very much obliged. Until next time.
Inaendeshwa na AfriPods.